You're listening to Black Helicopter News.
The Black Helicopter crowd knows
that. The tyranny is always lurking just around the corner.
They've been crazy, but now they're right.
Black Helicopter News starts now.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. This is Black Helicopter News. I'm your host, Andrew Robinson, and today we'll be talking to a very unique individual who goes by the name of Trip Bliss, who's traveled the world teaching yoga and learning esoteric wisdom. He was cool enough to give me a ride home from yoga class last night, and on the way back, we had an interesting conversation where we discussed yoga, consciousness, the third eye, meditation, and psychedelic experiences with DMT and ayahuasca. Truly a mind-blowing and enlightening conversation. Today, I'm getting a ride home from the yoga class from the special guest teacher of the class today, December 18th, 2015. I'm here with Trip.
What up?
So, you're an actual yogi. You're a yoga teacher. You're the first one I ever had the show, and the second one I really ever met next to Adam. I'm new to this world, but you guys are like the real-life guru.
Yeah, just kind of like satellites for other more like endowed gurus that are like big stars and like connected with larger stars themselves, now exhibit that light inside them. And they're kind of like when you play Mario Brothers and you get that star and you start blinking,
oh, yeah,
and the music gets faster. That's who they're like. They just keep going once you get that star.
So you teach a lot. You teach in other countries.
Yeah, I taught in about 15 different countries now. Like Sweden, England, India, all over India, and Indonesia, and Spain. Sweden, some in France, Pisa. It's been really fun because everyone comes from different mindsets. Like London's very like proper and they very like, oh, if I'm going to do something, it's going to be aesthetically the most perfect version of it. And they're not really into the whole heart thing. So that their biggest challenge is just getting into the emotional aspect. And then in America, it's the opposite. Like, they got the emotional aspect down so well. Like, Americans are so devotional in general. And just as an example of an American devotion, they said statistically that placebos are 25% stronger in Americans than anyone else in the world. So I think that's just a testament of how devotional Americans are, is that even if you give them sugar and call it a drug, we believe it's strong enough that it'll screw us up better than anyone else.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so, but then our challenge is to get the physical aspect, or the aesthetic aspect of it down. So it's like everyone's got terrible posture in America.
Yeah. What made you want to do this? You've been doing it for a while, so just a quest for like spiritual truth or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, just, but you know what it is? It's just like wanting authenticity, wanting like real people, surrounded by real people. Like when I was little, when I was 13, I used to go to church and I used to sneak out of the church and hang out with these homeless people that hung out in a little garden nearby. And I just felt like they were like the better, they were like a better message to me because they were just talking about their day, but just being around them and hearing them talk just seemed more sincere than hearing the preacher behind the pulpit.
Yeah, a lot of that has like guilt involved in the message.
Yeah, guilt, fire, brimstone, or you know what, a lot of it too is that there's a Zen koan that a Zen master hangs from a branch from his mouth, and if he's to say a word, then he'll fall. And the idea is that teaching can't really be spoken. It can be transmitted, but it's not really spoken. When we speak about it, we like deface its quality and we mutilate it, really. The more we write about it, the more we try to like make it something materialistic. But I've met a lot of Christian ministers that understand that principle. And to them, like, the idea of Christ consciousness is an experience. It's not something written. And then they look at the Bible and they look at people's testimonies as third hand experience. But they're rare. That's not a very popular thread. Yeah, and then I lived on the street when I was 18. I lived on the street for 2 years, just hitchhiking around the country. And that got me really intimate with...
You seem like you could be, like, you seem fully at peace and, like, you could be in anywhere and you'll be having a good time, or at least.
Yeah, more than likely. I'm easy to satisfy. I lowered my whole, my standard. Just got real humble when I lived in, some really tough times, you know? And it's good. That's why I'm so grateful for all the tough times, because they bring that standard down to, low, but to somewhere real. I guess you could say, the best standard to have is just presence. So as long as you're present, you can consider yourself the most wealthiest and most accomplished person in the world. And the most beautiful part about awareness is that it's always accessible to you, no matter what circumstance you're in, no matter where you are.
I can't believe when I just started yoga in the summer, I thought it was just for rich, fancy people, and I didn't know that there was cool people. But I was getting into fractal enlightenment, heart-centered rebalancing, and then I start going to the yoga, and I'm meeting awake people that are aware and are passionate and real.
How did you find out about Joey?
I found out from one of my friends.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you're not alone. There's a lot of people that, yoga is such an enormous topic that millions of people rally around for a whole variety of reasons. Not all those reasons are necessarily sincere. So you kind of have to navigate it a little bit to find your nook that you really, connect with. But I relate, before I was into yoga, I was really into, psychedelic consciousness, and I would read up on, what's that guy, McKenna?
Oh, yeah, Terrence McKenna.
Terrence McKenna, Timothy Leary, any kind of conscious expansion, Ram Dass, all these wacko ideas about, saying that this isn't the whole world, there's more to this than what you see. Just tickling the ideas of just being an artist, being creative, hating the system, and being punk rock, and growing up in an environment that never supports you, which is always cutting you down from who you are. It's always looking left. I'm always trying to get out of it. Used to go to tons of protests, joined all these anarchist circles, do all these direct actions against the police and all sorts of stuff. So I found yoga, it kind of consolidated that whole effort into one very well-architected direction. I felt I could manage and accomplish all these crazy ideas I had of conscious expansion and idea, everything, all in one practice.
I was always curious about the third eye and opening it. I always was fascinated with that years ago. And it's so cool that it's always talked about in every yoga class. And
yeah.
The third eye. What is your view on the third eye?
It's transcendental sight. It's also a chakra. So there's two schools of thought that can discuss what the third eye is. One of them is the more physical, metaphysical way, in that we have all these nadis. Nadis could be veins or central nervous system. But even more subtle than that, it's just general energy channels and things of energy flowing through us. And they amalgamate in seven locations in our bodies, where there's millions of nadis coming together, thousands and thousands of nadis coming together, and those are what we call chakras. So one of those chakras is the third eye, and it's enormous. If you look at the third eye from an evolutionary perspective, you have this look at all of life evolving strategically, competitively, trying to come up with the most ergonomic and adaptive creature it can to survive. And there's an energy center around the third eye, just above the eyes, in the middle, that has been a place where the brain has evolved and connected to its sight. And sight is a relatively new evolutionary attribute that this species, or this thread of species, has adopted. And it's just interesting because it essentially is the evolution of a sense. Not all species on the earth have even a sense of sight or a sense of smell or whatnot. So it's interesting just to think that the mitochondria that creates us was like, oh, you know what? There is something out there that I can access if I can only just evolve in that direction. And so it did. And that impetus came from the third eye. And we're not done yet. There's also more to this world that we could see if only we had the senses to be able to perceive it too as well. So I see that in all our chakras. So other chakras are trying to promulgate a receptor to be able to see a world that we can't access with just the five senses we have access to.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Party members have been murdered, Chief Inspector.
We're interrupting your regularly scheduled program to bring you this terrifying report.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
New York, very much a city still in chaos. The phones are not working properly. The subway lines are not working properly.
The sky now black with smoke in front of us, just across the Tigris River here. This is shock and awe, Tom, to the population of Baghdad. Shock and awe, indeed.
The people you liberate will witness the honorable and decent spirit of the American military.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
Come on.
It is a big idea, a new world order.
I love my dad. I'd kill for him. I'd go to prison for him because I love him so much.
I love Bill Clinton.
What does that make Hillary Clinton to the Bush family?
My sister-in-law.
When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy.
What do you think of Edward Snowden?
I think he's a traitor.
Obama is the one that kills the U.S. troops if the Russians bomb any of them. Obama is the one that put them in harm's way. Obama is the one using them as human shields.
It is the most corrupt, degenerate, criminal government in American history.
I'm here to warn people. You keep telling me to shut up. This isn't a game.
Welcome to America, ISIS. This is what we do. Woo!
We got people that have taken your asses out in this building right now. We're armed to the teeth, and we're not scared. You got that, you sons of bitches?
In 2012, your agency was saying, quote, the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda in Iraq are the major forces driving the insurgents in Syria. Mm-hmm. In 2012, the U.S. was helping coordinate arms transfers to those same groups. And why did you not stop that?
Why didn't you come forward before? What were you waiting for?
Well, for you, Inspector. I needed you.
I suddenly had this feeling that everything was connected. We're all part of it. Are we ready for it?
Just an example of how psychedelic that can be. It's like the dimensions all cast a shadow that is one dimension less than themselves. So a three-dimensional object casts a two-dimensional shadow, and a two-dimensional object cast a one-dimensional shadow. So you could think that a four-dimensional object exists and it casts a three-dimensional shadow, which is us. Fourth dimension being time, so the time and space together casts a three-dimensional shadow. And a fifth-dimensional object, which is completely beyond our ability to perceive, we cast a four-dimensional shadow. So everything we see is just like an array of shadows coming from a much larger source that's beyond our ability to perceive.
Will we be able to see that one day with evolution of the third eye? Or?
Yeah, I believe so, absolutely. I follow a lot of this philosophy that I found out another great guru, Mr. Sri Aurobindo, I guess prophesied that human beings are midway through evolution, that the idea of meditating onto a absolute consciousness that we all share is the end of our evolutionary trajectory, so that eventually we'll all have unlimited access to an information channel that exists between all beings.
Is that also called the Akashic Records, or is that a different school of thought?
You could say that, yeah. I mean, it's definitely two different schools of thought, but you could definitely make that inference for sure. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you see, like, this school of, this body of knowledge is permanent and also eternal. So you could think of it like all things are eternally answerable. They're all available to us. And certain people throughout the history of humanity have somehow, I could guess, had access to it. Like Leonardo da Vinci, or Einstein, or Newton. You know, all these guys were just geniuses that had access to some source or channel of information that was just generations beyond what anybody was coming up with now. It's just mind-blowing to think that Einstein was able to come up with, like, the energy, or he was able to calculate the atomic weight of the blast from the original Big Bang before World War II, even, as World War II is getting started. And all of these characters I mentioned were all vegetarian, coincidentally. And I feel like it goes hand in hand. Like, having access to this channel gives you this universal sense of belonging, and that universal sense of belonging convinces you not to partake in the harming of other beings, because you feel like, well, you're one of them. Why would you stab yourself in the hand?
I want to ask your thoughts on binaural beats and chakra activators and megahertz frequencies. You put headphones in and meditate. Some of them claim to be very powerful, blast your third eye open. What do you feel about those? Is it better to meditate with no music or with frequencies?
Well, I mean, everyone's into their own thing. I respect whatever tradition anyone wants to follow. My particular thread is a very sober kind of thread, where we try to see all phenomena as something materialistic. Even if it's helpful, it's still materialistic. And that awareness transcends the material world. So, it's nice if something can get you close to it, because it inspires you to want to transcend. Those things are helpful. But in the end, they're just going to be in the way of you actually getting to your goal. It's kind of like at the top of the mountain, everyone's enlightened, but you can't actually summit it until you're willing to give up the vehicle that brought you there. Or as they say in Buddhism, when the Buddha crosses the river with his boat, eventually he has to abandon the boat just so he can walk. The boat is his religion, his practice. So, like, if sound meditation helps you get there, that's great. But if you keep dwelling in the sound meditation as a means to the end, you'll never meet your end. Because the end is far beyond the material world. Okay.
Have you ever experienced DMT or ayahuasca?
Oh, yeah.
Those I want to try. Which one? Both?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's kind of like the same thing, but I guess unceremonially just smoked it and then also very ceremoniously drank it. Both of them were unique experiences that were very important to me. Being with the shaman was beautiful because, kind of just held the space for me to allow a deeper spiritual experience to occur, rather than just be distracted by my own creative impulse or world or whatnot. Two experiences, and both of them were glowing. One was in upstate New York with a bunch of shamans. We all dressed in white. They were a breakoff of this cult from South America. Everyone dresses in white and sings the psychedelic Christian hymnals. And so they were a breakoff of that, and a little bit rebellious, but beautiful nonetheless. And the best takeaway I had from that experience is that when the ayahuasca hit me, and we were in the woods by a river, when it hit me, I realized that all the trees that had been around us this whole time that I took, just, you know, typically taken for granted, they're beautiful, but you think that's all there is to them. But on the ayahuasca, I realized that they were all noticing me. The way you realize you're being noticed in a crowd when all of a sudden several people are looking at you and your hair stands on end and you're like, oh my god, these people are looking at me. Or you turn around because you felt something on the back of your shoulders and you realize all these people are looking at you. That's what it was, but it was all the trees. And I could feel them noticing me and kind of sharing that experience among themselves, saying like, look at this guy. What is he doing in our woods? He's such a silly character. And ever since then, I've never been able to look at a tree the same way because I see them as an actual living being with a will to live and friends and community. I just never thought a tree could have that. I just assumed they're, you know, they're just like too simple for that kind of experience. The other experience I had was on an island in the Mediterranean. It was with a Peruvian shaman who flew out to be there. And she was really beautiful because she had us sing songs together. And then we passed a feather around. We tripped for maybe 12 hours until the sun rose. We passed a feather around. And everyone sang their own song because we were in such an international location. Everyone was singing a song of their land. And all the songs were very unknown, you know, like shaman songs aren't songs that the public sing or hear about. Christianity is kind of like the dominating voice, and those are the songs for them. So these are the underlings. It was really beautiful. Also had lots of beautiful experiences on LSD too. But LSD is a little bit different because very super materialistic. Like mushrooms, psilocybin, and ayahuasca, they kind of pull your ego away from you and remove the thousands of years of cultural education you might have had and force you to return to the forest. But acid actually exemplifies this identity. So you become the super version of yourself. But that can be helpful if you're learning the architecture of what a materialistic mind is. The right context, it can be extraordinarily helpful. With the wrong context, you could just become the most egotistical person in the world on that.
What about hemp?
Yeah, I smoke marijuana. I enjoy it.
Me too.
I think it's got like beautiful passage in it. I try not to do it all the time. I used to do it all the time, literally for like 12, 15 years, just smoke every single day.
Sounds like me, actually.
But I think it's got a lot of creative drive in it. It's almost symbiotic with my relationship with music. And so I really pay it a lot of respect because it's led me in such a beautiful direction. Like I really, really honor that plant. It's taught me so, so much about just like sense of sincerity. I guess every time I smoke, I kind of just listen a lot more with a spiritual purpose. Not everyone who smokes does that, but I do.
I feel more compassionate, thoughtful, and think of people's feelings more if I'm, you know, toking.
Yeah, me too. It gets super intuitive.
All right. Well, there we go. This is our ride home from yoga class with Trip.
Trip Bliss.
I don't know. Is there a relation to Miss Bliss from Saved by the Bell?
No.
Okay.
That's it. Hand in hand. It's my mom.
All right. We'll end with that then.